You would offer a bumpkin.
I was
Mr. Nick.
back home over Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
And there was also someone else.
Some of the lights. Not a poster. Yeah, I'm just.
It
Congratulations. Yeah.
usually my vampirism is happening.
And Nick.
You've always been on. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Excellent. Can I ask you this? Is also better
Thank you. I'm also trying to be vegetarian in a few days.
Just let me know when you're ready.
Well,
yeah.
Jessica, would you be able to put the
I take it down when
I'll hear from someone
I
like
yeah,
I I'm supposed to be
okay.
I think,
Okay.
right?
Oh,
Oh,
I
I
laughed.
lost
Our
them in
plan for her. I mean, we're just
Oh,
girls.
scroll
Thank you
over
for
there.
Cats, Jason.
Of course.
Yeah.
So there
I knew
could
you
be like a change.
It was good.
It's not like you're going to worry and like we're getting new calls. If you well,
I
yeah. Okay, no. Okay. We'll
All
just kind of think
right.
about
We
will now come to order. Anthony, would you do us the honors of calling the roll?
I would. John O'Zare.
Great.
Vishwa
I just closed.
Present online.
Alicia Basquiat.
Here.
Nicholas Brennan.
Here.
B. Candelaria. Annifer Cardenas.
Here.
Paul Caruso.
Here.
Cameron Chappell.
Here.
Jason Chabirko.
Here.
Alessandra Coogan.
Here.
Issy de Tomasi. Devin Freeman. Emma Rose Gallant. Andy Garcia Ortiz. Irene Gattini.
Present.
Alicia George.
Present.
Malta Hassler. Mac James. Yusuf Khaled. Claire King. Kwayata.
Present.
Zhongyan Liu.
Present.
Xander Lynch.
Present.
Therese Beffert.
Present.
Tien Nguyen.
Here.
Marylise Ortiz. Sarah Raimondi. Katie Rohrbaugh. Siim Seth. I didn't see him on.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
He's on this.
Ian Smith.
Here.
Yuting Wu.
Thank you.
That's 20.
All right. With quorum established, we will now move on to approval of the meeting minutes, first for the November 10th meeting. Any motions related to the November 10th meeting minutes. Vander is recognized.
Motion to adopt by unanimous consent.
There's been a motion to adopt by unanimous consent. Second from Jason. Are there any objections to the November 10th meeting minutes? Seeing none, these minutes are adopted by unanimous consent. We'll now move on to the November 24th meeting minutes for consideration.
On that side, I'm misreading. I believe I was nominated for a AEF-PSF, and I also don't receive on the minutes.
Is that as of December 1st?
Oh, wrong meeting. Okay, that makes
sense. We're also have one more meeting between the November 24th and today.
Yeah. Wait, how are we reviewing 2 minutes?
Yeah, that's just when they got prepared.
They weren't ready yet.
Okay.
I see.
Yeah.
We weren't going to say that. Entertaining any motions pursuant to the November 24th meeting.
Maybe strike that on the record.
So slick. Vander?
Motion to adopt by unanimous consent.
Been a motion to adopt by unanimous consent. Second from Jason. Is there any objection? Without objection, the November 24th meeting minutes are adopted. Yeah. Right. At this time, we'll now move on to updates from committees and officers, beginning with the executive committee, Jennifer.
Yeah, so there will be a new incentivization of a new special committee for the IB Plus for 2027, which is the event that we just hosted, but now we're being us towards hosting. So do like project management as well as have creative ideas of how to we represent Cornell the best, just reach out to me. As well as we're looking for a sponsor for a legislation with Cornell on Fire. I can talk a little bit more about it if you're interested, but feel free to contact me.
Thank you, Jennifer. Are there any questions for the executive committee? Seeing none, we'll now move on to the operations and staffing committee. Andrew?
Okay, so a couple of things for the end of the year. So one, I'll be staffing that committee. So you can also reach out to me if you would like to be involved in the IB Plus planning. IB Plus is a great opportunity to show that Cornell is great and that we have a lot of things here that other graduate and professional students don't have. So be involved. The other thing is, we have, like historically and this year as well, had openings for law students and, MBA students that have, either never been fully filled or at least not in my time here. So we reached out and, we got a response from the law school. And so hopefully we'll have a few more members, probably starting in January. Well, definitely starting January. This is the last game. Nobody's here. So that's what I got.
Point of information. Is there any word on the other appointment, school appointments, like other than the law school? Because I know the vet school does appointments, or at least different cycle.
The vet school, actually.
Those terms have not ended yet.
Yeah. I believe they'll have their new appointees in January.
And we've also contacted business school.
Yeah, we also contacted the business school, but I did all this contacting today and the business school did not get back to me right away, but the law school did.
Another thing I'll add is Cornell's the best. We need to show that. We're not just great, we're the best. And any questions for operations and staff? All right, moving on, we have appropriations committee. Team, would you like to give an update? Done. No update.
Perfect. So it will be noted. Seems like no update.
Oh, fair enough. Did you?
Well, because I was worried that the audio was again misbehaving and he was trying to speak but was unable to speak.
That may be. Thank you, Sean. All right, moving on to Communications Committee. Andy?
No.
Thank you, Andy. Moving on to Finance Commission, Anu.
So, me, Sean, and other people on the Finance Commission are rewriting the GPSAFC guidelines for this coming year. We have some big changes we're going to try to make, one being defining the scope of field group funding and how that's intended to be applied in future years. More strict enforcement of like membership and attendance requirements, some language about funding policies and phrasings for club activities with union presence and so on and so forth. If any of you want to be involved with that rewriting process, we'd love to have you, so reach out. That's all.
Thank you, Anu. Are there any questions for Finance Commission? All right, moving on to Student Advocacy Committee, Irene.
Hello, hello. Connecting from virtual, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. No updates at this time, apart from now, I guess, game planning for the semester next term to come. So town halls are going to be something that I'll be looking towards. And so suggested topics are welcome, as well as a veteran or a veteran focused resolution. So if anyone wants to chime in on that, go ahead and talk to me. But apart from that, nothing else.
Thank you so much, Irene. Are there any questions for Student Advocacy Committee? All right. Seeing none, we'll move along to Programming Board. Paul?
My pleasure to announce that the theme for the 2026 gala will be Masquerade.
Woo! Wow!
The committee is pretty pumped about this, and we encourage you to be as creative as possible. We'll have a flyer come out at the first meeting in the spring semester. And yeah. Stay tuned. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. Are there any questions for Programming Board? All right. Seeing none, we'll move over to Diversity and International Students Committee. Alicia?
Hi. So I guess the last update is we would have our last meeting for this semester, which will be on Friday, 3 p.m. at Baker 132. So if anyone is interested, please feel free to come. So one of the agenda that we would like to be doing in that event is during our Thanksgiving, we collected feedback from the graduate community regarding things that have to be improved before coming to Cornell, life at Cornell, and after Cornell. So we will be like consolidating that into an Excel sheet and listing out things that we could support the graduate student committee. And last thing, we are so excited for the presentation today of Office of Global Learning. This is one of the best offices at Cornell that really supports this. So I'm so excited. We are so excited for your presentation. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. Are there any questions for Diversity and International Student Committee? All right. Seeing none, I'll move to Faculty Advising, Teaching, and Mentorship Awards Committee. Jason?
Hello. So as a spinning record, please, if you have any faculty, colleagues, postdocs, anyone who's made an impact on your or other colleagues' time here at Cornell, please recommend them for the nomination survey. It's in the communique. And I'm happy to report there will be a snazzy email that will be hopefully reaching your inboxes through various GFAs, graduate field assistants, in the next week or so, emphasizing the importance of nominations and wishing you all a merry break time. So that is all.
Right. Thank you, Jason. Are there any questions for Faculty Advising, Teaching, and Mentorship Awards Committee? All right, seeing none, I'll throw it back to Jason for the special grant.
Hello again, everyone. So as a reminder, we are currently reviewing the 54 applications that we have received. The plan right now is to have our actual review panel happening next week, and at that point we will have a ranked list, and whether the committee decides to upload that information on the box or present it during the first meeting of the next semester is to be determined, but look forward to that in the spring.
Thank you, Chase. Any questions for Special Finance Committee? Seeing none, I'll pass it over to Tao for the update from the Graduate School.
So, very good to see everyone. I hope the semester is ending well on this last day of classes, thinking of all of you. And I know many of you will be busy either writing or reading and commenting on final projects, papers, et cetera. So, I wish you all the best in that and hope you get some restorative time over break. I don't have particular updates before, I mean, beyond that. As I mentioned, admissions is very, very much on my mind. I can keep watching what things are looking like, and that's a big issue nationally as well for graduate education.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the Graduate School? All right. Thank you, everyone. At this time, we'll now move into our presentation for the day from the Office of Global Learning and International Services. I'm happy to introduce Brandon, Laura, and Margaret.
So I'll go ahead and start up. Thank you very much for your help with everything. Good evening, everyone. My name is Brandon Lanners. I'm the Executive Director for the Office of Global Learning here on campus. Thanks so much to Nick and the rest of the Assembly leadership for allowing us to be here to present. I'm also joined by my colleagues, Margaret and Laura. They'll introduce themselves in a moment. I have to admit, though, I am a little bit concerned to have my staff here saying that you have not just butter chicken, but samosas as well. That really raises the bar for my staff meetings now. So, yeah, no, it's such a great pleasure to be here. So, we've been asked to tell you all a little bit more about the Office of Global Learning and how it supports international graduate and professional students. So, we're going to go ahead and do
Do
that.
I do it?
Yeah.
Okay. There's the mouse, and I'll get out of your way.
Thank you very much. So we're going to go ahead and do just that. Everyone can hear me okay?
Great.
So our agenda is going to be brief, and we're going to make sure to leave time for some Q&A at the end. So a little bit about just our office. So, the Office of Global Learning sits within the Office for the Vice Provost for International Affairs, which is under the Provost's office. Our Vice Provost for International Affairs is Wendy Wolford, who's a faculty in CALS in the Department of Global Development. Wendy provides strategic leadership for the university around internationalization. Within Wendy's broader office, the Office for the Vice Provost for International Affairs, we have a few other units beyond the Office of Global Learning, including the Einaudi Center, which is focused on regional and thematic studies, such as Latin American and Caribbean studies or peace and conflict studies, migration. We also have our Global Operations, which is an office that supports logistics and operations for international research, teaching, partnerships, travel, and more. This includes providing resources that support the health, safety, and security for Cornell's travelers abroad. Some of you might be familiar with the travel registry, which is required for students to complete if they're going to do research or conduct other Cornell business abroad. And finally, we also have our Global Hubs, which is a strategic partnership between Cornell and 26 top global universities across 12 countries that is focused on student mobility, joint research, and local engagement. So, speaking more about the Office of Global Learning specifically, in terms of our structure, staff, locations, we have 25 staff across several different service areas. Today, we're going to be talking about two of those service areas. One of those is International Services, which serves international students and scholars with immigration needs, and the other areas are Programming and Outreach, which is focused on welcoming belonging, and success for international students and scholars. We're located primarily in Caldwell Hall on the Ag Quad, but we also have staff in Day Hall. So finally, just to talk a little bit about our work before my colleagues come up, a couple of things that I think stand out for the Office of Global Learning. It feels like our work is always timely. International is consistently in the spotlight. This constant attention can bring with it, you know, also challenges, which means that our staff really have a high level of professional standards, and diplomacy is really key for our staff, as well as collaborating with our campus partners. Our staff is also very service oriented. So we have a high client volume with over 60,000 appointments, calls, cases each year. We're also very high touch. As you can imagine, international travel and immigration are complex and consequential. And then finally, our staff is very internationally interested. I like to say that we channel our global enthusiasm to get to know more about where our clients are from and more about what is happening around the world. So with that, I would like to ask my colleague, Laura Taylor, to come up and introduce herself.
Hi, everybody. My name's Laura Taylor.
Thank you. I'm pushing this button.
I'm the Director of International Services at Cornell. I've been at Cornell, I guess, 31 years. And I remember this room. I was on the employee assembly for a couple of years and went through the same kind of motions and approvals and committee reports that you all just did. So it was really quite familiar. So, let's see. So my, I just want to give you a little bit of background about, you know, Brandon mentioned how many touches we get a year or how many we did last year. We have quite a large population. We serve enrolled students, but also students that are out on OPT. They're also under our purview. We have international faculty and researchers coming to the institution, some to teach sort of permanently or semi-permanently, and others that are here just visiting and doing research. And we also have interns. So altogether, it's a little over 10,000 individuals here at any one time on campus that are on a visa supported by our office. You can see right there that we have a large population that comes from many, many different countries, 131 different countries last year. And our largest student populations, which is probably no surprise to you, are China and India. I think Canada sometimes surprises people. But anyway, Canada's been number three for a while. It often is quite high up there on our list. In terms of staffing, International Services has seven student advisors and three scholar advisors and myself. So that's 11 people. So that's a small number of people for a large population. It's about 1,000 clients per advisor. We've tried to work really efficiently with what we have using systems and technology to try to make things easier for people. Among our functions are that we manage the immigration records and support immigration services for enrolled students, graduate students, on OPT, STEM OPT, and J1 academic training. We support the immigration needs of international faculty and staff all the way through to the green card. Many people aren't aware that we provide that level of service for incoming faculty. What we do. We have roles that are authorized by the government. Many people don't know that that's a thing that all institutions have to have. But in order to have international students on a campus, schools have to apply for permission from Homeland Security. And this has been true since before Homeland Security was Homeland Security when it was INS. It's been true since the 1950s. So Cornell applies for permission to have international students and every 2 years reapplies for reauthorization to have international students. And as a part of that, we're required to have what are known as designated school officials. So those are the people that sign I-20s and DS-2019 forms. And those individuals are all specifically approved and authorized by the government to do so. As a part of that, we have reporting responsibilities back to the government. And also many people don't know that we have to do that also. So we have to report lack of enrollment, under enrollment, changes of address, all sorts of, you know, changes of name, all sorts of little things, and they happen at different intervals. So some things we need to report in a within 10 days of them happening. Others are semester based. Others are data we need to report annually. And then, of course, we have biannual reports as well. The reason I mention that is that while a large part of what we do is provide service directly outward to students, I think many students don't understand that a big chunk of our work is actually in the background in with the data and the reporting for compliance purposes. So to support the population, we have a very comprehensive website. It's got a lot of information there. Sometimes the problem is there's too much information and finding it is the issue. But we try to keep as much information on our website because it also serves as sort of our policy guidance. We make sure that if there's something controversial or that something people are asking a lot of questions about, that we update the website. So we make sure that the position is clear for people there. We provide travel information. That's a big part of what we're doing this time of year, and we'll be updating some travel information soon. We provide local immigration resources. So we have set up an arrangement with a local law firm who can provide a one-time immigration meeting to talk about things that people have concerns about. The funding for that is ongoing, but we hope that people who do use it really have a concerning immigration situation, not something that's routine like an OPT question. We would like OPT questions to come to advisors on our team. We have both in-person and remote advising. After COVID, we came back and offered both and have been surprised that something like 85% of clients seem to prefer Zoom. So we've maintained that. We have a monthly newsletter. Oh, I forgot about tax information. I should mention something about taxes. It's up there on the list. We contract with a company called SprintTax, and all SprintTax does is taxes for those filing for national tax forms. So our office provides the, we have the contract with the company on your behalf, and we make sure that there are enough codes for everybody who needs to file taxes. You simply need to have a net ID to use the service. It's a big deal. Our office, my team, we're not tax experts. So we provide this service because there are no international tax experts who can provide services to 10,000 people locally. So we hope that you all make use of that service if you're filing non-resident tax forms. We have a monthly newsletter. We put out immigration alerts as they, is anything urgent, we try to get it out there to you. We have immigration related presentations, a visas after graduation program that we put on with local attorneys once in the fall, once in the spring. We also sometimes do other ad hoc sorts of programs. We did an entrepreneurship program a couple of years ago. We're doing two workshops this spring, one our standard visas after graduation and another on sort of thinking outside the box when thinking about immigration pathways and immigration options. And we'll be doing that with another local attorney. Let's see. If you need advice, the best thing to do is to open a ticket. It's a new system that we've developed, and it allows us to answer people more efficiently and for advisors to see what other people are saying so that we can be consistent in the advice that we give. It also allows us to create standard responses to some of the questions, which are, as you might imagine, we get many questions that are the same, and we want to be careful not to just answer with a form or a template if there is something specific. But in situations where it really is just somebody needs to know where to find something on the website, the system allows us to more efficiently respond to those sorts of queries that we get. We have an office in 300 Caldwell Hall. You can come in and pick up a document, drop off a document. You can get your I-20 signed, your DS-2019 signed, or if you have an appointment, you can come in for your appointment and see somebody. We do ask that you make appointments to see somebody. If you go to the website, you'll see that there's an online scheduling tool to make those appointments. And I think that's all I have on my slides. I think we're going to wait for questions. So right now I'll invite Margaret to come up.
That one. Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having us. I'm really excited to be here. So I'm Margaret Gallo. I've been with the university 39 years, only two and a half. I know, right? Only two and a half with the Office of Global Learning. And did I land on a fantastic job, right? Not only do I have great colleagues, but campus partners, and working with the international population is just an amazing experience. So let me start out by just telling you what our goal is in programming and outreach. You can probably guess. We want to make sure our international students feel welcome, right? That they have a sense of belonging, that they feel informed, that they're able to build communities and take advantage of the myriad number of resources we have, and we have so many across the university. We work with both undergraduate and graduate and professional students. Of course, today I'm going to focus on the graduate and professional students. So let me show you a little bit of data that Brandon pulled together. Notice that some of our programming focuses what Flora does, international services. It focuses on immigration issues and topics, visas after graduation. There's all kinds of programming that takes place, but it's really focused on immigration, tax info, careers, employment, et cetera. Other programming is focused on what we have up here is welcoming, belonging, and success. And we focus on incoming students with orientations. We provide opportunities for community building through our various events, help students find campus-wide resources. As I said, there are so many, and we really want to help enhance their success throughout their academic time here at Cornell, right? Not just when they come and they're building things, but all throughout their stay here. And as you know, that can be as much as 6 years. Okay, so I have to go to the next slide so that I can talk about what we are doing. So we assessed our offerings and determined we needed to focus more on a few things, right? Cultural bridging with academics, lots of differences when students come through study. professional development and making sure that our students could access resources, which ultimately helped to really inform our programming and our outreach efforts. So as a result, we have expanded our programming and we have topics that we review, such as self-identity, teacher-centered learning. We host several events throughout the year, summer holiday themed, like pumpkin carving and Halloween, Thanksgiving celebration that we just had with 1,200 people, and Valentine's Day. During winter and spring breaks, we also hold events for those who cannot go home, and that's for both undergraduate, grad, and professional school students. And of course, we find that there are a lot of grad professional school students who are here. So we've done all kinds of things. Johnson Art Museum, where we built sculptures and had a tour. We'll be going to the Lab of O in January. We've been to the Botanic Gardens, and they're very popular. We do ice skating, wall climbing, bowling, although those things are expensive. So not so much of that now, right? So we're doing other things, movie nights, flag painting, et cetera. Let's see, we also hold monthly coffee hours for scholars and graduate students. We collaborate with our wonderful graduate school staff. And those are held at the Big Red Barn. At the end of the year, we hold our graduation celebration, and we identify four students who, undergrad and grad, who have really represented the international population while they've been here. And it's a Global Citizen Award that is awarded, and they give very inspirational speeches. And it's just wonderful to hear what they have to say. I also want to talk a little bit about outreach. As with all of our work in OGL, we work with student organizations and campus partners, and those are critical to our success. So I work with ISA, the International Student Association, and then I work with your own DISC subcommittee, which has been a wonderful experience. I began with Ayushi, and Alicia is somebody I'm working with now. We look to you all for some guidance, right? On how to market our events and when to hold our events and what kind of events might be interesting to your population. And I'm always open to new ideas, right? New things within reason, right? Has to be legal. Can't be expensive. Too expensive. And then there are the campus partners we work with. And there are so many. Cornell Health, the graduate school. ELSO, that's the English, you know what that is, the English Language Support Office. Residence Life, and lots of other student and campus life divisions, departments, you know, housing, dining, all kinds of people. And those partnerships are really critical, very, very critical, as are the relationships I have with student organizations. So let's talk about some of the opportunities and resources for you all that we have. Here's the ice skating. Most of those students had never ice skated, and we didn't have any injury. Everyone still had all their digits, no concussions. So I was very happy. This gentleman here made this card for his mother, and I taped him. He asked me to tape a little speech that he did so that he could send it to her. And he talked about, "Mom, you're my first love. You're the reason why I'm here at Cornell. Thank you so much." And then that's our Thanksgiving celebration. Okay. Well, we continue to develop new and important information for our international population. And these resources are available to you, as I just said, as student leaders, right? You're really important. So in Canvas, we have a lot of informational documents. They were developed for both undergraduate, and then we have some for graduate professional school students. And we encourage students to look at these, review them prior to their arrival in Canvas, because we heard people need more information before they get here to Ithaca. We also do the Grad Pro orientations that take place in August. And again, there'll be one in January for those coming in mid-semester, mid-academic year, I should say. We also are trying to make sure there's information about getting to know campus, and not just campus, but Ithaca and the surrounding areas. We just did hiking in three of the parks around here. We also want to teach people about U.S. traditions, sharing cultures, and that's all a part of our programming and outreach strategy. So we work on that and provide information. There is also limited financial support that's available. That's for students experiencing a health crisis or a family emergency. We have a newsletter. Laura has a newsletter that talks immigration, right? Those are her topics. And I have one, Events at Global Learning. And that one lists all of our upcoming events and opportunities. And then I would be remiss if I did not mention websites. Laura talked about the website they have, which is phenomenal. You can find almost everything, you know, type in a word and it pops up. It's such a great resource. It's hard to get students to read and look at things, right? And I wish they would explore it a little more, because it really is. We've got videos of presentations, got so much information in there. But as Laura mentioned, it takes some time to navigate. We also have a global Cornell website, and these all provide comprehensive guidance on how we support our international community. Then, of course, there's the Office of Global Learning Staff, and we really are very good resources when it comes to questions about almost anything. So I hope that you will reach out or feel comfortable to reach out to myself, to Laura, to Brandon, whenever you've got a question or a concern or ideas that we might be able to fly with. And that's really all I have. Thank you, especially to the DISC community, for including us, for working with us. It's an important relationship for us, and I look forward to more collaborations in the future.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brandon, Margaret, and Laura. At this time, I'll move to questions. Are there any questions for our speaker?
Hey, excellent presentation. I just wanted to inquire a bit more about your emergency funding. Mm-hmm. You touched on it briefly. In what scenarios is that applicable? Like, does it have to be if the student has issues internationally or even locally, or what that might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have a emergency funding that is available throughout the year. Currently, you know, with the emergency funding, it's a challenge, right? Because we want to provide, you know, funds to people who need it. At the same time, if we make it too open, then the funds go really quickly. So right now, like Margaret was saying, it is focused on kind of two main areas: students that have health emergencies that they're not able to get fully covered through insurance. A lot of times dental work is not covered. So international students will reach out to us and say, hey, you know, here's a bit of extra funding that I need for dental work. So that's one area. Then another area has to do with students who have a death or a sickness in the family, and they need to be able to get home to be with their family abroad. So those are the two primary areas. But I think a key thing is that we're constantly working with other units on campus, you know, with the graduate school, you know, with financial aid, with student campus life, to kind of coordinate on some of the different pots of funding that are available to come together to help students as much as possible. So.
Yeah, so thank you so much, all three of you, for the great presentation. And I really loved working with you all. And I should say, these are the group of people who are like really free. You can just go talk to them, wonderful office. Actually, I have a question for the international office. I think you mentioned a little bit about reporting, you know, whether in terms of enrollment. So I was just curious about reporting to the university or the government. And also, in this type of reportings, are you also supposed to give information about the student? And in that case, what level of information do you give and how does that affect the international students?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, the government already has all of your information because in order to issue the I-20, we have to issue it through the CVIS database, which is a database that's owned by Homeland Security. So they already have a lot of information about everybody. That's where your forms come from. We have to report any changes to things in that those records. So changes would be things like a change to a name or an address. We have to report that to the same database, to the CVIS database, so that updates your government record. We also have to report each semester whether a student is enrolled full-time or not. The way we do it at Cornell and the way many big schools do it is we take it on faith that everybody who's supposed to be registered is going to be. So we register everybody. And then in the 6 weeks following, we have to follow up with people who aren't fully enrolled. And we reach out to those individuals because the numbers are luckily rather small and we can usually handle the 60 or so people who show up each term as not being registered full time. And we work with those individuals one by one to try to resolve that issue. But if in fact we have students who can't enroll in a semester, that is something we have to report to the government that they're not enrolled for that term. And then we work with the student about what their options are from an immigration perspective. We have to report other things like if a student is arrested or suspended, we have to report that. So there are some other things that we hope we never have to report, but sometimes we do have to report that somebody's been suspended or is been convicted or arrested. And that, you know, I'm talking about on campus, that by like if the city of Ithaca picks somebody up and somebody is arrested, that would be something we need to report.
Any other questions for Office of Global Learning? Oh, Eugene.
Hi. So my impression from more than one institution is that often if you're dealing with the international community, you have to deal with things that are very unexpected. And also you need to take the time to deal with things on kind of an individual basis. So my question is, can you describe what, like the level of workload that like, you know, arises from the different like queries and like emergencies or whatever that you receive? And also like, can you also describe your staffing level? Like for example, how many people you have on your team and whether you think your like staffing level is like enough to be handling this workload?
My big boss is in the room, so I gotta be careful about what I'm saying. I think we have been given a lot of technology to help us support students. And so we've tried to make the best use of technology to do that. But it is a constant stress to keep, you know, to keep meeting people's needs. We have 7 student advisors and myself to deal with the student side of our population. So it's a pretty high client ratio. Many questions are very much the same. I would say that 80% of questions are routine. And so that's the good piece, especially for people who've been doing this a long time. You see that 80% of what's coming in, it can be answered very quickly and simply. And so that's good. The other 20%, not so much. So it's sometimes we have cases where we get an initial query that turns into, you know, a half a day's work, or sometimes an ongoing back and forth that takes weeks to resolve. Some of those cases with the under enrollment, for example, those are very high touch. So every one of those 60 people might have several phone calls, several in-person meetings. It varies by case, but you're right, things that are unexpected come up. And when they do, we have to, in some cases, not always, right now, thankfully, it's not, we're doing okay for the last couple weeks, waiting for the next thing to drop. But there are times when I think we're operating a little bit like an emergency room in a hospital. You know, we have our triage people that are just dealing with what the emergencies are, then everybody else just trying to keep everything floating.
And maybe add to that, so I think between our immigration team and all the welcoming, belonging, and resource work that we do, a really big focus is communication. Right. So really proactively communicating the newsletter that we just talked about, you know, that's a newsletter that goes out to, at this point, you know, 9,000 people. And we have 70%, you know, open and read rates. Right. And I think the importance of people, you know, like we said, it's students maybe don't read as consistently as they need to. But between our website, the newsletters, the communications that we send out, and I think the overall goodwill that the international community, I believe, feels that we have towards them because of the programming that we do, the orientations that we do, the recognition that we provide them. I think that really creates a good kind of communication relationship. And so people are more likely then to read the things that we send, really internalize those things, which I really do think helps us avoid some of the more sticky issues, not always, right? But in terms of getting their things done, following the rules that they need to follow around immigration, I think that communication is actually really key to avoid things from having to escalate.
Annifer? Hi, I'm just wondering which communication form is most popular in terms of like mostly used by international students? Like which one do they prefer the most?
So we have all of that data. So really what, and Laura talked about this a little bit, but what we really tried to do is steer people more towards the ticket system that we have. That allows us to, like Laura says, you know, triage things a bit better. We can also have a better record of what communications we've had with the person. As you can imagine, you know, when it's an immigration, you know, question, all the specific details are really important. So as opposed to having those sprinkled throughout, you know, emails and across different staff, we've spent the last year working with a system that other units on campus also use. Graduate school uses the same system that I think has really helped us to streamline things. And so we really do try to channel people into that space first. Also, you can imagine that some questions, because they are repetitive, the more time our staff spend on those repetitive, kind of easy to answer questions, that pulls them away from having time to really get into the more complex things that their expertise requires. And so that's also why we really try to channel people towards this ticket system, because that also has some, I guess, answers to commonly asked questions that pop up. And all of this is to try to really get students the answers they need, requiring less resources on the front end. That again opens up more resources for the complex cases. So I think definitely the ticket system, but certainly as you know, time goes on throughout the year, sometimes people call in more, they'll drop in more if they have more urgent questions, they're getting ready to travel, or what you know is happening in the news cycle that can also impact. But yeah, we keep track of all of that data to make sure that we're providing multiple channels for people to reach out and that we're getting back to them quickly.
What's the turnaround for those tickets? How many days do people wait, or how many business days?
Okay. The thing about the ticket system that's been confusing, and we're trying to refine that now and make it better, but the way it's set up is if a student selects that they have a question about OPT, what comes back is everything we can think of that they might need for OPT, including links to videos and steps and how-tos and everything else. And we ask people to reply if that message doesn't answer their question. So if a person doesn't reply, we consider them done. And so occasionally we have someone who replies 5 days later and then says, I need my answer today because it's been 5 days. But it's 5 days from
new results.
Yeah, from the, they have to follow up with the ticket to get it reset. And then it's 5 days from that. If it's something more specific, if a student comes in and said it's more complicated than any of this, and they put in other, it's going to come directly to us. It's not going to get a general response on OPT that we think will hit all the, you know, all the buttons.
Are there any other questions for OGL?
I have a very quick question. Since Cornel is very good at computer science, do you try to think of trying to use like a chat box? Like chat box, so people, if people ask a question and then they can understand or catch some keywords, then you can ask people to read the website there. Then you can decrease lots of your work.
We're thinking about that.
That's very, I think Cornel also have an in-house chat box already. So yeah, I think you can communicate with, I don't know which office, but they already have very nice one.
We're actually, that's something that we're thinking about doing, maybe with AI.
Okay.
I think the Office of Student Life has a similar big red chatbot that provides a similar function.
As you can imagine, in terms of immigration guidance, it's, you know, there's a, you know, we have to be careful, you know, with it, you know, what it's providing. But yeah, that's absolutely, you know, to help people find things on the website that has so much information. Yeah, how to get them the answer more quickly, but also make sure that what is the threshold for talking to one of our advisors and not just acting on advice. So,
any other question for Jess? Seeing none at this time, let's thank Brandon, Margaret, and Laura.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, at this time, now move on to an update section. So, seeing as this is the last meeting of this semester, I wanted to call our attention to some of the work that GPSW has undertaken and accomplished over the past few months. In terms of our resolutions, we've passed six, starting with our internal budget from SEAM. We moved on to vote to fund Annabelle's grocery, $40,000 over 2 years to help the organization at a time of dire transition. With R3, we called for greater support for Cornell Library on the heels of $5 million in cuts this year and $7 million in years prior. With R4 and 5 from Irene and the Student Advocacy Committee, we recommended to the Student Code of Conduct and Procedures Review Committee several line-by-line edits to make the procedures and the code more fair for graduate and professional students. And lastly, with R6, we passed a $101 per student activity fee down from all-time high of 110. And so by and large, this was a very productive and exciting semester on the GPSA, and it couldn't have been done without all the people here. So thank you to everybody here. And with that, we got to meet a lot of people along the way. I think this is not an exhaustive list of presentations we've had just in this one semester, including, but not limited to, the Office of Civil Rights with Katie King, the Office of Graduate Student Life with Olivia and Jana, Cornell Concerts, President Kotlikoff himself, Cornell Dining, the Presidential Task Force on Institutional Voice, the Committee on the Future of the American University, the International Graduate and Professional Students Organization, the Big Red Barn, the Office of Global Learning as of today, and a special meeting for the Student Code of Conduct and Procedures Review Committee, making for 11 presenters and only 8 meetings. So we got out this episode. All right. And with that, we have lots to look forward to in the spring. I'll just call our attention to just a few kind of big goals for the spring semester, which are, number one, a formal recommendation on funding from the Special Grants Committee. Already it's been incredibly successful with, I believe, 58 applications to your committee and over $1.3 million of requests that the committee will be sorting out and bringing to us in the spring. creating a new committee, a new special committee for planning our IV Plus 2027 conference to be hosted here at Cornell to show the rest of the world how great and best Cornell is. creating town halls surrounding the PhD advisor-advisee mentorship relationship and to solicit input from graduate students on a variety of impacts to graduate student life from Irene and the Student Advocacy Committee, and new work to be undertaken by Appropriations and the Finance Commission on clarifying funding guidelines for student organizations, and particularly around formalizing our relationship with unions. Lots of exciting stuff to look forward to. I have two further announcements to make during this meeting. The first of which is relating to our one and only, the man working behind the curtain, Anthony Wang. Anthony has been serving as GPFA's clerk since he was hired in November of 2023. And ever since I've been here, he's been a staple of these meetings. He's been a valuable contributor to the GPSA, typing up our minutes, including all of our confusing motions and superseding motions and indecisiveness all together. And since then, he's participated and been a critical contributor to over 30 meetings. And so at this time, in his last meeting with the GPSA, I'd like to give a very grateful thank you to Anthony.
Thank you, Nick.
I have one more thank you to give, and that is to our outgoing Diversity and International Student Committee Chair, Alicia George. Alicia, in many ways, has come personally to embody a lot of what it means to be a Cornelian to me, as somebody who I look up to within the chemistry department as a student leader, and has also become a huge contributor to the GPSA in her time here and in this space. Alicia, as you know, tends to light up whatever room she's in. She plans amazing events, and frankly, she just knows how to get the job done. I will miss her incredibly, both personally and professionally as a member of this assembly. So thank you to Alicia, and we look forward to all that meets you after graduation.
Thank you.
Thank you, both of you. All right, at this time, we will now move to open forum, seeing no new business. Are there any topics for discussion today?
Jason. Yeah, following up on the thanks, I want to thank each and every one of you. You being here is what makes GPSA work. And of course, there's the holidays coming up. So make sure wherever you're traveling, whether it's staying here in the frigid tundras or going to warmer pastures, I hope you have a wonderful time.
Any other points for open forum? Going well? Going twice? Entertaining emotions. Xander?
Motion to adjourn the meeting in the semester of GPSA.
There's been a motion to adjourn, a second from Jason. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, and for the last time of 2025, the GPSA is adjourned.